Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Now in depth on how much is too much of the Chinese way. It might have been the little red star stickers on her son's forehead, or the communist songs he'd begun singing around the house, or maybe it was the shaming texts his teacher was sending. Within months of her son's entry into a prestigious Shanghai kindergarten, Lenora Chu was both concerned and curious about how her boy would manage the experience. She writes in the prologue to her new book, "It was America's celebrity culture versus China's model citizen, standing out versus fitting in, individual excellence versus the merit of collective behavior." In the end, her son appears to have adjusted more quickly than his parents. More on that in a moment. As Lenora joins me in the studio, I'm interested in your view on this, particularly if you're an educator or the parent of a child in school right now. Do the Chinese get it right with their reverence for their teachers, their strict discipline, their unwavering focus on academic excellence? Could we learn a few things from the Chinese? Want to hear from you if you're an educator, if you have a child in school right now, if you have an opinion on this. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. I'm on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. Lenora Chu is a journalist who lives with her family in Shanghai. The new book is called Little Soldiers, and welcome. It's good to have you in the studio.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
We should say that one doesn't just enroll a child in this elite kindergarten that your son attended. It seems like it's almost like a college admission.
Yes, we jumped through all kinds of hoops to get into this state-run school, which was one of the best in Shanghai. We figured it was the best early education China had to offer. And, you know, multiple calls, multiple texts, multiple going by the gates.
And basically kind of begging.
Pretty
right
much.
To get in.
Yes, it was luck, really. We happened to be available at a time that they had a spot, and they were looking. You know, they take very few foreigners, and we were lucky to get one of them.
The teachers are revered and idolized, and oh my gosh, the power that they wield. That seems to be one of the things that you had to adjust to pretty quickly.
That's right. So the first week, my teacher forced my son to do something he didn't like. Eat eggs. And I was upset. So I march off to confront her. And she basically says, "Don't ever question my authority in front of a child again." So in China, teacher knows best.
Do you think she's right for the kind of discipline and what she expects from her students in the classroom? I mean, are those kinds of demonstrations counterproductive? Is she right about that?
So it's funny. We landed in this very extreme environment, and I started to reflect upon what was happening back home in the U.S. So China, you know, they demand respect. And what I noticed is when they demand that parents respect them, it's sort of signaling to the children to fall in line, too. And so the teacher in China spending 100% of her time teaching in the classroom rather than managing student behavior.
Ah, so and that's a big difference, isn't it?
It is a big difference, yes.
I think when I really began to understand what a culture shock this was for you were the anecdotes that you wrote about the kind of texting or the messaging that the teachers would send out and the way the parents, oh my God, would scramble to respond and to the obsequiousness, right, that they were displaying to this teacher.
That's right. So there's a messaging platform called WeChat, and you're expected as a parent to respond instantaneously to a teacher's directive. And there are all kinds of things, you know, staple workbooks, you know, go off to the bookstore and buy this book. And, you know, within a minute of her directive, 30 parents will come and say, "I will do as you say, teacher, you're so amazing, anything you want," you know. And so it's like keeping your chair in this game of musical chairs.
Well, I mean, what's really the underlying point of that?
I think it's just, you know, teacher knows best. Now, obviously, it goes overboard. Once I started to realize, you know, some people say the Chinese produce the world's best students. And what I was seeing on the ground was, frankly, a little troubling. So that's when I expanded my investigation to go into other classrooms. I started talking to other students at the high school and college level. And obviously, the sort of teacher authoritarianism, this teacher culture, can go a little bit too far. I'll give you an example. I was in a preschool classroom where an art teacher was teaching Chinese children how to draw rain. Rain falls all kinds of different ways, right? It blows sideways, you know, it can rain, your cats and dogs. There's all kinds of rain. But in this classroom, it only falls from the sky to the ground. And if you couldn't do it in that way, you got your paper tacked to the wall. So when people talk about independent expression in the Chinese classroom, this is something they're still working on.
Okay, so that's interesting. They get their paper tacked to the wall as an example of somebody who doesn't understand and isn't conforming.
That's right.
Right?
It's a public shaming, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Kids learn how to avoid that pretty quickly.
That's right.
Including your son.
That's right. So what my son benefits from is that he has us at home. So, you know, there are good things about the Chinese way. And one of this is sort of respect for the teacher, but also this idea that he can accomplish anything if he puts his mind to it, that sort of connection between effort and achievement. And these are some of the issues that I delve into in my book.
I mean, you just mentioned the eggs, that your son hated eating eggs and he'd resist you and and Rob at home. She got him to do it by just basically forcing it on
him. She forced an entire classroom to put eggs into their mouths and sit there. And eventually, most of the kids swallowed. So obviously, you know, we don't use methods of force in the U.S. This is horrifying. And that teacher would be dragged into court if it were in California, Minnesota.
That's right.
But the funny thing is, the Chinese feel that there are certain things that kids just have to do, no questions asked. And eggs and nutrition is one of them. And as a parent, I hated the process. But a little part of me likes that he eats eggs.
Uh-huh. To the phones to Charlie in Stillwater. Hey, Charlie, what's your experience with this?
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking the call. I've lived in China. I've lived in Taiwan. I've had kids have gone to, like, top universities. And I remember one comment when I was at Harvard with my son is the person said, we want students that are bright and interesting. And sometimes Chinese students are monochromatic. They're taught to do well academically.
Uh-huh.
They don't have a lot of variety in what they're doing in school beyond academics. They score well, of course, in SATs, ACTs, but they don't have, like, the broad skill set that most, like, high universities really expect of students. Any comment in terms of, like the monochromatic focus on academics alone?
I'm really glad you called, because Lenora gets to that in the book. What would you say?
Yeah, so, you know, in education in America, we expect to educate every child. In China, it's a sorting mechanism. So you have millions of students falling off at the high school entrance exam, another few million at the college entrance exam. And so there's a lot of anxiety around test scores, and that sort of drives behavior. So you're absolutely right. I mean, this is a school system in China that, you know, has basically been built from scratch to filter millions of students through schooling, and they've taken some shortcuts.
I thought this conversation that you had with Guo Liping, am I pronouncing that right? He's somebody who teaches preschool teachers how to teach. And he says to you, the difference between the American and Chinese styles of education has to do with God. What does he mean? That was so enlightening. What does he mean?
He means that in the U.S., there's sort of this Judeo-Christian value of having an internal compass for behavior. And in China, all the rewards are external. How are you doing on this test score? How do you look to the rest of the community? How is your child performing? And so it's the difference between internal compass and having external drivers of behavior.
I mean, Lenora, we should also say that the Chinese are not without concern about this perception that they are not creative, that they're monochromatic, as our caller said. You know, I read what you said about Jack Ma, the guy who founded Alibaba.
That's
and what he says in China about his education.
He's one of China's foremost entrepreneurs. And he said, had he gone all the way through to China's top schools, he would not be an entrepreneur. He would be a researcher. So his idea, and I agree, and many Chinese educators agree, that if you stay too long in the system, it crushes that sort of ability to, you know, think outside the box, to express yourself creatively. And they are working on that. So Chinese teachers, when they come to America, they're so amazed at how we stimulate our kids' curiosities. We're really, really good at that. And that's what they're hoping to take notes.
Why aren't they? I mean, is that just where it bumps up against conformity? If we're going to actually get through the academics that we need to get through, we can't have people off the page. I mean,
yeah. And partly, you know, an older generation of teacher, if a student challenges them in any way, they take that as an affront to their authority.
Okay.
And it's this sort of face-saving culture of Chinese society that they also have to get over. Now, the younger teachers I've noticed, they spend time in Australia, Europe, and the U.S., and they're understanding that there isn't a direct link. So I have hope, but it's going to take a couple of generations.
Lenora Chu's in the studio with us. She is a journalist. She lives in Shanghai with her family, and she's written a new book about what it was like to get her son into an elite kindergarten in Shanghai. And then let's just say the education she got, she and her husband got, along with the education her son was getting. The book is called Little Soldiers. And I'm asking you, if you're an educator, maybe you're a parent of a child, you know, in grade school or middle school right now, what do you think about this idea of whether the Chinese get it right with their reverence for their teachers? We haven't talked about the gift giving yet, and we will. The strict discipline, the unwavering focus on academic excellence. Do they have something that American educators and parents, I don't know, ought to know something about? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at Carrie NPR, to Martin in Duluth. Hey, Martin, how's it sound to you? Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, I push my children to question everything in a respectful way, question everything and to doubt everything and to critical thinking skills at as early as age as they intellectually can. And I think that's important, that so they don't become just a sheep and follow along with what's said. And I think that's more important. I think it's more important than anything they can learn in school.
So that's really interesting, the critical thinking school.
Sure.
Skills.
So I spent a good amount of time in U.S. classrooms, in Minnesota, Boston, New York, California. And the critical difference is that the teacher in the U.S. is always asking their kids, what do you think about what we just talked about? Let's discuss. And in the Chinese classroom, that's not really a question that comes up. So I absolutely agree. In the U.S., in the early years, and kids come home and have a seat at the table, and parents are asking the same questions. So we're really good at that. And the Chinese know this. If you actually look at their latest education reform plan, it's full of insecurities. It says need to cultivate environment for independent expression. So they know we do this really well.
So there is something called the White Bible that is guiding some of the reform. Is that right?
That's
right.
Explain
what it is.
So in the book, I call it White Bible, but basically it's a guideline for early childhood development. And in there are things like maintain happy emotions for children, you know, encourage them to play and explore, and even don't beat children. You know, the Chinese government felt they needed to spell out. So what we have to realize is this is a developing country that's taken some shortcuts with their education system. This book is really about the good, the bad, and the ugly. So it's a mixed bag.
Don't beat children has to be in the, in the so-called White Bible.
That's right.
Let's talk for a minute about the gift giving, because I have to say, those are some of the anecdotes that I've shared with friends. It just blew my mind. Your first experience with going out to buy these really expensive designer bags, because?
So around Chinese New Year, which is the biggest holiday in China, I get wind that the other parents are planning elaborate gifts. One mother says, Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Prada, you know, and she has a sort of laundry list of foreign luxury goods that she's going to be gifting to the teacher. So I get really anxious. But what I don't realize is you have to be part of the club to have a teacher accept a gift. And I actually do. I buy a Coach purse thinking I'm going to, you know, show a token appreciation, but she doesn't accept it because she doesn't know that I'm safe. Now, there is a lot of gray money running around in the education system, and the government is trying to stamp that out. And because of this sort of anti-corruption campaign, a teacher won't accept a gift unless you're safe. And I was not part of the club.
Oh, okay. So there's still kind of an underground gift-giving culture there, and the teachers expect it.
It's gone
up. But they're careful.
That's right. They're more careful the last couple of years because of this anti-corruption campaign. They've actually come out and said teachers cannot accept gifts. Another common practice was that teachers would run outside tutoring services for money for their students. You know, as a family, you would think there's a lot of pressure, you know, because you want to please your teacher. Education is so tied to life prospects. So the government is trying to break that link. But because, especially in Beijing and Shanghai, there's so much money swirling around, it's tough. It's a tough one.
Do you think let's say for the old fashioned teachers, the experienced teachers and the gift giving, is the perception that you reward me and I will somehow reward you and your child? I mean, is it that quid pro quo, do you think?
That's right. There is sort of an expectation of reciprocity. That's why if a teacher accepts a gift, she knows she's on the hook for something.
Got it.
And she won't accept every gift, though. But if you realize it contributes to massive inequality, because some parents will say, oh, you know, Johnny got a seat in the back, you know, whereas Nongnong got a seat in the front of class, you know, so there is a little bit of that connection. I don't want to say that every teacher takes gifts or even that every parent gives them, but it is enough of a problem that the government had to step in.
Call here from Sharia in Minneapolis. Hi.
Hello, my name is Sharia.
Sorry about that.
No problem. So I have been teaching recently online Chinese kids through an online language school. And I also work with high schoolers here and a program through the University of Augsburg where we are teaching kids to have conversations and teaching teachers how to facilitate those conversations with students. And one big difference I see between the Chinese students that I teach and the kids that are in our classrooms here is the diversity issue. So we haven't touched at all in this conversation on the difference between a homogenous culture and a culture with a lot of diversity. And I think that really kind of controls the way that we have to teach our students here. And we can't really just do one method for all students.
That's absolutely right. So the Chinese way prioritizes a group over the individual, and it's much easier when, you know, 90% of the population is Han Chinese, which is the majority ethnic population there. That's definitely true. But when I looked a little bit deeper, I did find that there were a few methods that I felt that American students could benefit from. And really, it's all about the attitudes towards education, the respect for teachers, and also that concept of eating bitter, which is a term in Chinese culture that translates into hard work in the classroom. When I actually looked into the studies, I found that in America, there's more of a connection between innate ability and talent when it comes to learning difficult subjects. And educators will say that means we're sort of giving up on certain kids because we don't feel that they have what it takes.
You know, I was shocked, Lenora, at how few kids from rural areas of China are being well educated. Oh my gosh, that's a huge population that the country is okay with leaving behind.
That's right. So outside the large cities, you know, half of students are high school dropouts. This is a major, major problem. This is, you know, one of the biggest inequality gaps in the world.
We never hear about that. That's really right. The first time I'd read about that is in your book.
That's right. And in my book, I follow a couple of characters in rural areas, and one of them fails the National High School Entrance Exam. And 3 years later, she's working as a masseuse in Xinjiang province. You know, instead of working with her head, she's working with her hands. Her best friend, who passed the high school entrance exam, is now in college. So this is high stakes. This is a high stakes test-based system. And especially in rural areas, they fall off the ladder.
If you pass the exam, how does it work with paying for college there?
So, you know, there are backdoors because there is gray money swirling around in the system. That particular family whose daughter did not pass the high school entrance exam, had they had the money, they probably would have been able to find a principal who would have found a spot for her. But they didn't. They were nomadic shepherds. And so she had to go immediately to work. China is working on developing a vocational track. They're working on trying to keep more kids in the system. But again, you know, a work in progress.
And for parents who are middle class, what would college and kids that are achieving, what would college cost them? Anything?
Not much. Just textbooks, fees, that kind of thing. It's very affordable. So they don't have this private school, you know, tuition here.
Why are so many Chinese students wanting and coming to the United States?
Part of that is to escape this sort of high-stakes system. Most of the urban Chinese I talk to, they realize we all know that the secondary and the university system in the U.S. is best in the world, and everyone aspires to that. All of the characters that I follow in my book eventually want to end up in the U.S., and one does.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was insightful. To Carol in Mendota Heights. Hi, Carol. What's your experience with this? Hi.
I wanted to ask Lenora her opinion on Mandarin immersion schools. Our son is a first grader at Jiming in St. Paul, and it's been a very positive experience. The teachers are from China, incredibly hardworking, and I feel like it's a nice mix of the benefits of the Chinese system, but also here in the U.S., so without some of the challenges that she mentioned. And I was wondering if you had any opinion on that.
The last third of my book, I call the middle ground. What is the ideal blend, you know, of U.S. and China, or what kind of education cultures do we bring to the table? And I feel that the Mandarin immersion schools, especially many of them in the U.S., are getting it right, that sort of early rigor and discipline, but still allowing kids to express themselves and explore. So I think it's a great idea. But one thing to keep in mind, if you want to achieve Mandarin literacy, you actually have to get your kid to sit down and drill those characters. There's no other way to do it. And if you know, we're okay with that, great. But if not, you know, literacy is not possible.
So you have two sons. Mm-hmm. Is Rainey, I mean, has he achieved that Mandarin literacy?
He has. So he's 8 years old now. He's been in the system for about 5 years. He's in the equivalent of third grade, and he's probably up to about 1,500 characters. And the reason I don't worry about him is that he has us at home. So I feel he's picked up all the signaling around respect for education. He knows how to sit down and work hard, but then he comes to home to us and we're doing soccer. We're going to museums on the weekends. And a lot of Chinese parents are thinking about that balance too.
And your youngest son is not going to this special kindergarten,
no.
Right?
So this kindergarten, this Chinese kindergarten, I butted up so much against the administration that they eventually decided that we were troublemakers. So they did not let our younger son in. So he's in what would be the equivalent of an American public school there.
And is that okay?
I have mixed feelings about it.
Do you?
You know, as a parent, it's always like you want the best of both worlds. And he doesn't have that sort of early discipline and the habits around education that my son had.
But how do the two boys interact given their different educational experiences at home? I mean, what do you see that says to you, I don't know, what he's learning in that American public school over here might be as beneficial as what Rainey's learning in the system?
I think that there's what we're so good at in the U.S. is options. You know, I was just having a conversation right before I came in here about, you know, what is good for this kid might not be good for another kid.
Uh-huh.
And I think that that's what the Chinese want too. And we should be really thankful that we have that here in the U.S.
Laura says on Twitter, what I like about Chinese teachers are that they assume strength in children. American parents tend to coddle and protect. Is that
true? That's exactly right. And that's my top takeaway, really, is that the Chinese believe that every child can learn. And there's no signaling around self-esteem. If a child doesn't do well in school, the whole family gets behind that kid to try to get him up to speed. It's not about, oh, good work, you tried anyway. And really, there is that belief that children can achieve. And that is my main takeaway.
Call here from Lisa in Two Harbors. Hi, Lisa. You sound like you have some experience with this.
Yeah, I was in China a year ago, and I met a young American woman who was teaching in an English language immersion preschool for Chinese students. And she told me her classroom walls were glass.
Hmm.
And the parents, the moms and the grandmas, would sit outside and watch her interact and the other teacher interact with the students. And then they would tell her afterwards that you did not spend enough time with my child. You know, it was very, very hands-on, which kind of reminded me of that Western, like, super controlling, get in the face of the teacher, the high expectations for her as a teacher. She said it was, and her fellow teacher that guests would call the children, they called them little emperors because they were the focus of the whole family. They were predominantly boys. And anyway, that was her feedback to me. I just found it really fascinating.
It is.
Yeah. So in China, as families are getting more money, with money comes entitlement. So teachers are beginning to have some revolt, for sure.
Teachers are saying back to the parents,
yes,
look, I'm the professional here.
That's right. That's right. That is changing. You know, so respect for the teacher in China is changing a little bit as parents feel more entitled and they have more money, you know. And so that is troubling. One of the things that the Chinese culture gets right is that respect for teacher, but it is changing in the urban areas.
When you were nodding too when she was saying about the little emperors and how the boys are treated.
Yeah, there's this term, Shaowangdi, little emperor, and you know, you have a culture that, you know, had a generation of the one child policy, and so you have two parents, one child, two parents, and four grandparents. So you have six adults with expectations on this one
pressure.
Child.
Oh,
the pressure,
gosh.
As well as the coddling, definitely.
I mean, the expectations, though, that the whole, I don't know, face and future of the family rests on this.
That's right.
Academic excellence. Again, look at the guy that founded Alibaba, right? They must have thought he was going to be a terrible disappointment in the early days. And
that's
look
right.
at him.
That's right. Yeah. And actually, the Chinese are looking at the Jack Ma style now. They're thinking about Steve Jobs, the ones I talked to in urban areas, and they really are looking to entrepreneurship as the wave of the future. So
let me squeeze Nancy and Fergus Falls in here. Nancy, your mother was from China. Is that right?
Yes. My mother was a music educator for elementary school students in China, and she had my brother while she was there. And I'm actually a product of the one-child policy, which is why she had to come to the U.S.
Interesting.
So kind of a unique perspective. But I was going to share a different point, but you reminded me of this, of how there's this difference between the little emperor mentality and just the way that we in America raise our children. And I've noticed a difference in the way that my mother had parented my brother, had been very involved in schooling, been very involved in this educators, just continually trying to push him, push him, push him. And then I kind of had this difference of freedom of ability. So I have respect and reverence for professors and teachers, of course, but I also pursued the arts. So here's my brother who went for biology, the medical field, and then here I am free to kind of do whatever I wanted to because he had those beginning years really enforced by not only my mother, but also our grandparents and then
super interesting.
Nancy, interesting.
I feel like you got the best end of that bargain. I'm sure your brother is happy in what he did, but I mean, the best of all worlds there for you. Did it take you a while to realize that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, she also was a single parent growing up too, so we had that influencing it as well. But it was interesting to see how my mother disciplined us and really wanted to hone in these values versus my classmates that were, much more apt to be, I guess, troublemakers. Not to blanket statement everyone, but I was the quiet, disciplined one in the classroom, but artistic as well.
Good to have your call. Lenora, I'm going to mention your book again. Lenora Chu's book is called Little Soldiers. I'm also going to mention Amy Tan's new memoir. She's coming here for an event with me in mid-October, and she writes a lot about the intense focus of the family on achievement and how the parents it's poured all into the boys and what happens to the girls there. Hey, good to see you again.
Thanks so
Thanks
much for having
much.
Me.